Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 22, Elements of Material Creation, verses 27 and 28. 28 is the only one there. No, 27. Okay, I'll just read 27. Eva me punikaksha mahantam samshayam vidhi chetam arhasi sarvigya vachavir nayanai punai. Translation. O lotus-eyed Krishna, O omniscient Lord, kindly cut this great doubt out of my heart with your own words, which exhibit your great skill in reasoning. Purport. Sri Uddhava requests Lord Krishna to clearly demonstrate the difference between the material body and the spirit soul. Text 28. Tvato,
tvato
jnana,
jnana
hi jivana,
jivana
pramosha,
pramosha
te,
tra,
shaktita,
shaktita
tva,
tva
eva,
eva
hi
Atma,
Atma,
Mayaya,
Mayaya,
Gatir,
Gatir,
Veta,
Veta,
Na,
Na,
Chapara,
Chapara,
Tvato Gyanam Hijivanam,
Tvato Gyanam Hijivanam,
Pramoshaste Trashaktita,
Pramoshaste Trashaktita,
Tvam Eva Hyatma Mayaya,
Tvam Eva Hyatma Mayaya,
Gatim Veta Na Chapara,
Gatim Veta Na Chapara,
Tvato Gyanam Hijivanam,
Tvato Gyanam Hijivanam,
Pramoshaste Trashaktita,
Pramoshaste Trashaktita,
Tvam Eva Hyatma Mayaya,
Tvam Eva Hyatma Mayaya,
Gatim Veta Na Chapara,
Gatim Veta Na Chapara,
Tvato Gyanam Hijivanam,
Tvato Gyanam Hijivanam,
Pramoshaste Trashaktita,
Pramoshaste Trashaktita,
Tvam Eva Hyatma Mayaya,
Tvam Eva Hyatma Mayaya,
Gatim Veta Na Chapara,
Gatim Veta Na Chapara,
Tvata,
Tvata,
from you,
from you,
Gyanam,
Gyanam,
knowledge,
knowledge.
He, indeed,
indeed.
Jivanam,
Jivanam,
of the living entities,
of the living entities.
Pramosha,
Pramosha,
stealing away,
stealing away.
Te,
te,
your,
Atra,
Atra, in this knowledge,
in this knowledge.
Shaktita,
Shaktita,
by the potency,
by the potency.
Tvam,
Tvam,
you,
you,
Eva,
Eva,
alone,
alone.
He, indeed,
indeed.
Atma,
Atma,
your own,
your own.
Mayaya,
Mayaya,
of the illusory potency,
of the illusory potency.
Gatim,
Gatim,
the real nature,
the real nature.
Veta,
Veta,
you know,
you know.
Na,
na,
not,
not.
Cha,
cha,
and,
and.
apara. Any other person? Translation. From you alone the knowledge of the living beings arises, and by your potency that knowledge is stolen away. Indeed, no one but yourself can understand the real nature of your illusory potency. Purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Matasmriti Agyanam Apornam Cha, from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. By the Lord's causeless mercy, one is enlightened with knowledge, and by the Lord's illusory potency, that knowledge vanishes, and one is merged into ignorance. Those bewildered by Maya cannot understand the difference between the material body and the spirit soul, and thus should hear from the Lord Himself to remove this illusory covering. Eva me pundarikaksha mahantam samshayam pridi chetum arhasi sarvagya vachobhiyanaya naipunai. O Lotus Eye Krishna, O Omniscient Lord, kindly cut this great doubt out of my heart with your own words, which exhibit your great skill in reasoning. Toto jnanam hi jivanam pramushaste cha shaktita tvam eva hyatma mayaya gatim veta na chapara. From you alone the knowledge of the living beings arises, and by your potency that knowledge is stolen away. Indeed, no one but yourself can understand the real nature of your illusory potency. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharane Niravishesha Shunyavadi Pastuchyadesh Tarane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasudhi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So Uddhava has placed his questions before Lord Krishna in regard to the elements of material creation, how the material creation is constituted, what makes it up. He has placed his question or few questions in this regard to the Lord, and he's made it clear that it's not a very easy subject to understand, and many people have many different ideas. That's one point which he makes, that I'm asking you because who else can I ask? Because I ask one person, he's got one idea. I ask another person, he's got another idea, and it's very confusing. But if I ask you, you're the great authority, then I can be confident that you'll give me the right answer, because you really are the greatest authority. Greatest authority and the most intelligent. Your ability to present things, explain things is just unparalleled. So then right at the end, after discussing this point of how different people have different ideas of what is this world, what's it made of, and like that. So right at the end, Uddhava asked a question, which is a slightly different question, but it's also connected, is that in all these different descriptions, different ideas how the material world is made up, in many cases the soul is one of the elements mentioned, although in some cases the soul is not mentioned, in some cases the soul is confused with the super soul. So Uddhava asked a question, last question, which we looked at yesterday, that it really seems to so many people that the soul and matter are not two different things. It really looks like they're one thing. Because the soul, particularly the soul, accepts a material body and really just dives into, gets buried in, completely absorbed in the body, and what is the body, what type of body, and just merges, it seems, just merges with the body. So it appears to some people, or even many people, that it's just one thing, the living body, the living being embodied, is just one thing and not a combination of two things, the soul and matter. And, well, from the same idea, slightly different perspective, that matter has merged with, either the soul has merged with matter, or matter has merged with the soul, but some serious merging has gone on. And this is now the condition, it's all merged. So there's no need to make distinctions because they've all conglomerated completely. Just like if you are, well, perhaps making a drink, shall we say, then you have your water and various whatever ingredients and some sugar. And you mix the sugar in with the water, and initially you can see there it is, it's the sugar, it's separate from the water, but then you mix it in. After a while, no sugar, apparently. They've merged. And they pretty much, they have merged, actually. Yes. So like that. When you have, the idea is that the soul and the body are really quite different from each other. Temporary body, always changing. We're sitting here, we've been sitting here for the last 10 or 15 minutes or so, and our bodies have changed a little. The food has been digested a little more. Our hair has grown a few microns. Something like that. The body is in a constant state of flux. The soul is constant. The body is constant in changing. The soul is constant in not changing. So, look at that. It's like, in one sense, the difference between oil and water. Petrol and water. You try and mix petrol and water, oil and water, and in a little while, so you may shake them, stir them somehow, try and get them mixed up, but in a little while, particularly with petrol and water like that, very quickly petrol comes to the surface and water is underneath. Because they're mutually exclusive. So the general understanding is that the soul and the body are quite exclusive of each other. But here Uddhava says, it appears to so many people that when the soul becomes embodied, a process of merging happens. And you end up not with a soul and a body, but you end up with one thing. Soul body, sort of body soul. just one thing. You end up with just one thing. So this is difficult. Many people feel like this. And people cannot see the soul. So you cannot show them, at least in a very direct sense, you cannot show them, look, there's the soul, there's the body, or there's the soul in the body, there you see. You cannot really show them in those terms. You can show bones, you can show blood, different things like that, which are also within the body. You can show them. But you cannot show the soul. Give him a microscope, 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. But that is the size of the soul currently. But that, in terms of perceiving the soul, seeing the soul, that is not the main problem. The smallness in size, it's a problem. But it's not the main problem. The main problem is the soul is materially invisible. Because the soul, by definition, by nature, is not material. It's transcendental, it's not material. And therefore, the senses cannot perceive it. Unlike, other small things, if you have a microscope, you can see it. Without the microscope, you cannot see it. But the soul, even if you have a microscope, very, very powerful microscope, still, powerful enough to see something which is 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair, some material thing, still you wouldn't see the soul because it is invisible to the material senses. So this point, Uddhava's feeling, this is very difficult, it's a very important point. It's so important to understand, I'm spirit soul, I'm not this body, therefore I should not be entangled in the body, I should not be attached materially, rather I should be completely in spiritual life, completely in devotional service to the Lord, and nothing else. This is extremely important information. It's extremely valuable. If a person can grasp this and then apply this practically in their lives will be transformed for the better. Practically, well, actually unlimitedly. But to demonstrate it, to show it, that's another thing. It has to be done. It can only be shown or established by someone who's exceptionally intelligent. And who's exceptionally intelligent? Well, there's a number of people actually, but ultimately Krishna is the most intelligent. And Uddhava, by some good fortune, just happened to be with Krishna. So he had the opportunity to question Krishna, so he's doing that. So his point is, this point is so important, vital, but it's so difficult, only you can explain it. Yes. So, only you can give knowledge of this because, well, there are two verses we're looking at. In one, he glorifies the Lord for being the most intelligent. And in the second verse, he glorifies the Lord. You can give this knowledge because you give all knowledge. And you give forgetfulness too. You give the capacity to understand, and depending on the karma of the person, depending on their just general condition, their desires, and like that, then Krishna may or may not give the real understanding of how these things are working. But the basic point is, whatever understanding you've got, it was given by Krishna as a reciprocation. In other words, if you got, or in other words, if you serve Krishna very nicely, Tesham Satati Yuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam Tadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mam Upiyanti Te, to those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give the understanding by which they can come to me. So in these terms, if one serves Krishna very nicely, then Krishna will give, or may give, will give very nice understanding. So everything falls into place. And then it becomes easy to accept Krishna, and it's no longer, there's no longer confusion, doubt, and other ideas sort of competing with Krishna consciousness. So Uddhava is glorifying the Lord in these terms very nicely. And certainly it's true. We were discussing this point a little bit some days ago, that Krishna says, chapter 15:15 of Bhagavad Gita, Sarvasya Chaham Hridi Sannivishto. Aham Hridi. I am situated in everyone's heart. And then, as is quoted here in the purport, Mata, from me, Smriti, remembrance, Jnanam, knowledge, Apohanam, forgetfulness, these things are coming from me. So therefore I'm asking you, Krishna. So this is a very important point in Krishna consciousness, to accept and recognize and to try and appreciate how Krishna's in control. Actually, Krishna's in control of everything. But in these terms, and it's a very, you know, it's a very essential point, practical point for us in our daily lives. Krishna's giving us our knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. We mentioned the other day, one devotee went into an exam, having studied and studied and studied and studied and studied. She really went out of her way to cover the material again and again and again. Went in there, it was a 3-hour paper. After something like an hour and a half, her mind went blank. Blank. And she sat there for 1 hour or 45 minutes, just having a panic attack. And then she cooled down a little bit in the last half hour, but she couldn't finish the paper. She did a little more, but she couldn't finish the paper. Anyway, mercy of the Lord, she passed. She only answered if she got everything. I think I mentioned this. If she had got completely correct everything she answered, she would have got 68. She got 54. So she passed. But these things are happening. Krishna is supplying everything, particularly to the devotees. But Krishna's particularly supplying knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. And not just to the devotees. Not only to the devotees, but to everyone. This is an interesting point. In so many ways, our karma, you know, we're getting the reactions every day, different things happen, things come our way, different events occur, sometimes we lose something, Sometimes we find something. I just found some pictures yesterday. I had been searching for and didn't find for the book. Anyway, it's too late now because the book's printed. But anyway, we found it. So yeah, Krishna's controlling everything. But for the non-devotees, they're getting what they're due in terms of their karma. But in Bhagavad Gita in 15:15, Krishna, at least it appears, Krishna's making a broad point that he is supplying knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness for everyone, and not just the devotees. So surely we've all had experience of being in a situation like an exam or just some situation and forgetting something and knowing that we should know it, even telling ourselves, okay, I must remember this. This I must remember. And then later on we realize, oh, I forgot it. But then sometimes, in some situation, some remembrance just comes. This is all coming from Krishna. And particularly for the devotees, it's all coming from Krishna. As we mentioned, just three or four days ago or something like that, for the devotee, Krishna's giving remembrance of himself, knowledge, understanding of himself, and forgetfulness of our material existence, previous existence, for the devotees. For the non-devotees, he's giving remembrance of whatever they're doing in their lives, understanding of whatever they're doing in their lives, to whatever degree. But that sort of recollection is coming. And forgetfulness of himself, Krishna's giving. Krishna's working in these ways. So therefore, when it comes to some deep point, some point which people don't understand, who's going to give the understanding? It can only be Krishna. And that's why we only become devotees, or we only get enough understanding to start becoming devotees, when we get some mercy and some enlightenment from Krishna, usually via the devotees. Maybe a devotee gives us a book, or a devotee speaks to us, and like this we start to develop some understanding of reality and Krishna consciousness. And then as that understanding develops bit by bit, then a conviction develops. Yes, I should apply this. I should become a devotee. So other than when Krishna, by his mercy, via the devotees, sometimes just directly, other than that, when Krishna gives his mercy in the form of that understanding, this point people don't understand. Soul, body, how it works, what is not what. Of those who have not got Krishna's mercy, none of them understand. Even the impersonalists, they've got some idea. They don't understand. They got some idea, but the wrong idea. There's a spirit soul, but he's God. There's a spirit soul, he's me, and he's everywhere. I'm everywhere. I'm all pervading. It's all one. These types of ideas impersonalists have. Other people, for other people, it's just, yes, I am this body, and life, what is life? It's just a program, a field within which I can increase my material enjoyment. But then those who are not devotees, those who have not received the mercy of Krishna, the impersonalists, they have some spiritual idea. They have some spiritual idea, but it's the wrong spiritual idea. It is called the last snare of Maya. The last snare. When you have, you know, sort of you're spiritualizing your life, you've understood in an impersonal way that this is what you should do. So you've turned your back on material life, and you're now making a little progress in an impersonal way. And then finally you may see yourself, the soul, and you think, very good, I realized myself, I just realized God. Last snare of Maya. Spiritual realization, but you make a mistake at the last step. I'm God. And then it's just, everything is lost. This is the last snare of Maya. So it's a very special thing, that understanding. Knowledge, understanding, remembrance, forgetfulness. These are very, very special functions within this material world and in the spiritual world also. They're very important functions. And therefore Krishna is very involved with them. Krishna's very involved to see that people get the understandings they deserve, people get the understandings which are relevant, and for the devotees, that the devotees get the right understanding and understand him, and understand how to progress in devotional service. So for a difficult question like this, what is the relationship between the soul and the material body when they come together? Do they actually merge like sugar merges with some liquid, like salt mixes with the sabji or the dal? Is that what happens? Or do they remain distinct? Or what really happens? Such an important question. So Uddhava is asking Krishna himself. Any comment or question? Yes, Jai Prabhu.
The Prabhupada says in one of the questions, when the soul comes in contact with material bodies, like incompatible situation arises.
Well, that's true. But the problem is, people, even though they have, everybody has so many difficulties with the body, birth, death, old age, and disease. Everyone is having to deal with these things. But still, people, so many people, they don't understand the incompatibility. They usually think, well, it's just one of those things. Life is full of ups and downs. I remember one boy, he was a devotee, many years ago, this was when we were raising funds to build the temple, and he left the Association of Devotees, and he got a job as a salesman. But he would come and visit us sometimes. And so we said, how are you doing as a salesman? He said, really bad. Haven't sold anything for days. And so we said, oh, you know, why continue then? Come back. And he said, no, no, no. They taught me like a sort of a slogan or a perspective on the situation that before you can walk, you have to learn to crawl. So in other words, before you get it together, you got to suffer. And another slogan. Every person who refuses to buy something from you means one person sooner someone will buy something from you. This is a material attempt to sort of pacify salespeople who are failing. So yeah, life is very difficult. But the tendency is that people persevere. And they don't. It takes a lot for them to get the idea, hey, maybe this whole program is wrong. The whole thing. Not just the way I'm doing it, and not just who I'm doing it with, or, you know, my technique, or whatever. But maybe it's just the whole way of life is wrong. And therefore Srila Prabhupada said, human life begins when someone seriously raises the question, why am I suffering? Seriously. You know, like a very with a very deep intention, meaning why am I suffering in general in this world, and whatever I do, I'm suffering, and in whatever way and whoever with, and why am I suffering like this, with a view to making the necessary changes. When it becomes clear what the overall alternative is, I'm going to do it. I'm going to apply it. That's when human life, real human life, begins. Otherwise, oh, why am I suffering? I cut my hand. Oh, let me put an elastoplast on it. Okay, finished. That's the end. Life is now going on. But this idea, you know, human life begins when we question, why am I suffering? It means, in that sort of very broad sense, why am I suffering? But for the devotees, it seems self-evident, because the devotees are so experienced and so much realization, so much understanding from Krishna. And for the devotees, they can see, why are these people doing like this? Why are they wasting their time? But the people themselves don't see it. I've mentioned before one of our God brothers many years ago, like 73, he came and joined the temple. And he told us that somehow he got a sense of self-realization. He sat down that evening to read it and read the whole book. He didn't stop. And by the time he finished, he felt, that's it. It's true. That's the answer. It's clear. I'm going to become a devotee. That's all there is to it. And he thought, you know, it's so clear. Anybody who gets this book, it'll become clear like it has for me. So he gave his friend the book. He said, read the book, I'll check with you tomorrow. Checked with his friend tomorrow, and his friend said, oh well, I read a little bit, it was okay, but not my sort of thing. And he couldn't believe it. It's so clear. So then he came and joined the temple, Any other comment or question? Sayug? Questions? Comments?
Well, Krishna is like the autocrat.
What about?
The autocrat. He's autocratic.
Yeah.
But sometimes his tendency to be liberal, sometimes he, even Bhagavad Gita, when he speaks to Arjuna, he says, this is my opinion, or learned person say this.
Right. Well, he's an autocrat, and he has the right to be autocratic. But if someone's an autocrat, doesn't mean they can't do things in certain ways. Doesn't mean they have to just be, you know, kind of very heavy and direct. They can also be gentle if they want. But he's got that right. And you see the way the material world is working. It's very autocratic. What people are going through in material life, how the karma is working. It's inflexible. It's only with the devotees there's flexibility. Srila Prabhupada ki.